Begin the current daf Masechta Sanhedrin daf Lamed Beis. Begin on the top of the Amud where the Gemara begins the fourth parak of Masechta Sanhedrin, parak Echad Dinim Mamnis, which continues in the theme of the previous parakim, going all the way back to the first daf in the Masechta, discussing the different amount of judges and different parameters that apply to both Dinim Mamnis regarding monetary law and regarding Dinim Nefashis, capital law. So that the Mishnah begins Echad Dinim Mamnis, that whether it be the same as regards to monetary law, the echad din nefashis, or whether it applies to regarding capital punishment, bedrisha, that there's a requirement of drisha, which are known as bedikos, which is general interrogation of the witnesses, ubechakira, and there's also, which are known as the seven questions, which are what day, what hour, which are the more specific questions that we investigate the witnesses, and that therefore applies both by monetary law and by din nefashis. Shneimar, like it says the pasuk in the Yikra, it says mishpat echad yilech, and that one judgment should be for you, that there should be no difference between monetary law and din nefashis. And by din nefashis, it says in Dvarim Yud Gimel, v'derashta v'chakarta, that you should seek and that you should check it out. So just like over there, we know there's drisha and chakira, so too by din nefashis. Now Taisa points out, although the Mishnah just opened up by saying that they're the same by drisha v'chakira, because the pasuk says mishpat echad yilech, that they should be the same, but then the Mishnah then goes on a whole long list of differentiating between din nefashis and din mamonis. That's because things that apply to being guilty or not guilty, that you don't equate them, because that doesn't pertain to monetary law. Monetary law is not guilty or not guilty, it's who wins. And therefore there are all these differences that we find between din mamonis and din nefashis, which that's what the Mishnah then goes in to say. But ma bein din mamonis and din nefashis. But what are the differences between monetary law, the court case, and between din nefashis? Says the Mishnah, Din Mamnis Beshleisha. Monetary law is with three judges, as we taught this in the beginning of Masechta and of Beis Mepeis. The Din Nefashis Pasim Beshleisha. But regarding a case of capital punishment, that requires 23 judges. Another difference. Din Mamnis Paiskin. Regarding monetary law, the deliberations of the court could open up Bein Leschus, Bein Lechaiva, whether to find someone guilty or not guilty, whichever one they want to. But din nefashis paischen leschos vein paischen lechayv. But regarding din nefashis, they have to open up only in regards to finding merit for that person and not to try to find them guilty. And the Gemara is going to explain where do we know this from. Another difference: din mamnis matin. Regarding monetary law, we could lean the judgment after the majority al pi echad, even based on just one more judge, one over the other bein leschos bein lechayv, whether to find him meritorious or guilty. So for example, let's say two judges say Zakai, one says Chayav, or the other way around, they will decide it based on just one more. But the din nefashis regarding capital punishment matan pi echad l'schus will only lean towards the majority of one if it's to find him not guilty. So if let's say 12 are saying he's not guilty, 11 say he is guilty, then he'll be not guilty. But if al pi shnayim l'chayav, but regarding making him guilty, then we don't go after the majority, only if the majority is at least two more than those who say that he's not guilty. As the Gemara says in the beginning of Masechta Daf Beis, where it says, Leisiach Haram Lerois, we don't go after a majority for bad, meaning for one, only actually has to be two more. And the reason why we say that's only specifically by Dini Nefashis, not by Dini Mamanis, is because, as the Gemara tells us later on, Daf Lamavam Beis, the Pasuk tells us, Leisata Mishpat Evyoincha, that we don't do it regarding an individual to find him guilty, based on one, but rather two, but it tells us you could do that regarding prosecuting a Shar HaNiskal to execute the ox, and if we could do that regarding the ox, which is someone's money, and it's even the killing of a soul, but an animal soul, for sure we could do that regarding other monetary law, that we do go after one, not to find guilty after one, is only by Din Nefashis. Continues the Mishnah, another difference is that Din Mamnis, regarding monetary law, if let's say after the court has concluded their judgment, and then they want to undo that judgment because it was found out that there was a mistake. So the machzirin, so they undo what they had, what the verdict was, bein l'schus, bein l'chayva, whether it's going to be for a person's favor or whether it's going to go against him. But din nefashis machzirin l'schus, but regarding capital punishment, will only undo the verdict if it's to find the person not guilty, but ve'ei machzirin l'chayva, however, but we do not overturn it to find the person guilty, as the Gemara in Daf Lamed Gimel and Beis will explain the source for this halacha. Another difference, Dinu Mamanis Hakom Alamdin. Regarding monetary law, everybody, even the students that are sitting in front of the judges who were never appointed to be on the court itself, they can also teach, and find zchus b'chayva. They could say something that would be a merit and something that would be a demerit. The nefashes, but regarding a capital punishment court case, hakom olam zchus. Yeah, everyone, even the students, could say something they would find a merit to exonerate this individual, but ve'en hakom olam b'chayva. But they cannot go ahead and teach something that would incriminate him and find him guilty. Another difference. Dina mamonis, regarding monetary law, hamelamed cheva, a judge that started off in the deliberations finding reasons to say that this person is guilty, he could change and then be melamed schus. Then he could find favor. He's not stuck. And velamed schus, melamed cheva. If someone had originally said a favor for this person, he could then change in deliberations and find them guilty. Din nefashes, but regarding a court case of din nefashes, if someone started off finding that this guy would be guilty, he could then switch tracks and find reasons to say that he's not guilty. But if the person started off finding reasons why he's not guilty, then that judge cannot go ahead and retract and start finding reasons why he's guilty. Now, this is a svara based on the pasuk of Behitzilu, which we have to try to find ways to defend and protect this person from being executed. And as Maral actually says at length in Be'er HaGailah, that's actually, as we find many of these halachas, that is the intention of the court, although we have to be truthful, but the objective of the court, Hashem will take care of someone, but the objective of the court is to find the person innocent if there could be that element of truth over there. So the Gemara actually teaches on Daf Lamed Daled that this halacha is only during the deliberations. Then they can't back out. And the reason for that, the rationale for this is because since you tell me can't back out, so he's stuck with his opinion that the guy's not guilty, although he's thinking he is guilty, he's going to have to attempt to try to find rationalizations and interpretations to defend his opinion that the person's not guilty. And maybe through that, all his attempts, he'll actually find a legitimate proof that the guy's not guilty. But yeah, of course, after the conclusion of the deliberations, when they're about to hand down the verdict, and they really went over every side possible regarding the court case, and he still doesn't find it possible that this guy is not guilty, then he could go ahead and find the person guilty. This halacha was only said regarding during the deliberations. Another difference, dini mamonis danin, regarding monetary law, they judge, meaning the deliberations of the court case, are bayayim, but gaimrim, and the conclusion when they hand in the verdict, is balayla, meaning it could, if they want to, it could be at nighttime, as the Gemara Daf Lamed Aleph teaches this halacha. But indeed, in the fashis, done by Yem Begrim Balayla, regarding capital punishment, they judge, the deliberations are during the day, and the conclusion, the verdict also has to be handed down during the daytime. Another difference, din mamon is grim by yom. Monetary law, you could come at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you could be finished 3 hours later, you could conclude it that same day. And that's bein l'schus, bein l'chayva, whether for the person's favor or not. The nefashis, however, regarding capital punishment, you could conclude the court case that same day if it's to exonerate that person, and you could send him on his way. But if, let's say, they cannot find a favor for him on that first day, so you cannot conclude that he's guilty on that same day, rather, only on the next day can you go ahead and find him guilty, which is the halacha known as halana sadin. You have to sleep over it till the next day. Maybe during the nighttime you'll find some type of thing, whoa, I can't believe I missed that, and that would make him not guilty. So therefore it's important that, and it's halacha, that you cannot find him guilty din nefashas that day. You rather have to wait till the next day. So lafikach, therefore, says the Mishnah, ain't danin. So we don't judge an individual in the capital punishment, loy be'er Shabbos, but loy be'er Yom Tov, not on a Friday, and not on the day before Yom Tov, because then they cannot go ahead and conclude if the guy's guilty on the following day, because they're not allowed to execute somebody, Mrs. Bezdin, on Shabbos. And also you can't then delay it till Sunday, because that's what's known as Inu Hadin, because the moment that really the judges have concluded and they know that that he's really guilty, they just have to wait till the next day. But now that he knows he's going to be executed, that delay is the affliction of the judgment, and it's a painful for a person who knows he's going to get executed, just that he has to delay. And therefore, we don't judge capital punishment case on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov. Another difference, says the Mishnah, is dinim amnis regarding monetary law and hatzmeyas v'ataharis. If someone comes to ask us regarding if something is pure or not, maschilim in agadol. So you start your questions with the greatest of the judges. See, what does he say first? He's the greatest one. But the nefashis meschilim al tzad. But regarding capital punishment, you start from the side, meaning from the smaller judges, because maybe if you would start with the greatest judge and he would say the guy's guilty, so then none of the other judges are going to want to disagree with what he says, because as the pasuk says leisana al riv, which literally is translated as do not answer regarding a dispute. But it also is translated as Lesan al Rav, because the way it's spelled in the Torah is without a yud, so it could be read the word Riv rather as Rav, meaning don't disagree with the words of the greater one, and they'll be afraid to disagree, and therefore then we'll be stuck. If this guy thinks guilty, no one's going to want to disagree, so therefore we start with the smaller judges. The Mishnah concludes, one final difference is that Kol Ksherin Lodin Din Mamnas. Everyone, even a Mamzer, is kosher to go ahead and be a judge on a monetary court case. But not everybody is fit to be a judge for capital punishment, but rather pure bred pedigree kahanim levim yisraelim that can marry into a family of kahanim, meaning they have yichus, they're pure lineage, and they can marry the daughters of kahanim, only they are fit to be judges on a din nefashas court case. So the Gemara goes back to the opening halacha of the Mishnah, where we compare dinim mamnas to dinim fashas regarding requiring drisha b'chakira. Ask the Gemara, dinim mamnas mi be'in drisha b'chakira, is that really so? That regarding monetary cases, you need to go ahead and sequester and interrogate the witnesses of a monetary court case? Which would sound like that, because if we would find discrepancies, then we would invalidate them, especially regarding the halacha of chakiris, which those are the seven primary questions. But ask the Gemara, but Reminu, but that seems to be contradicted from the following Brisa. Brisa says, Shtar Shazmanikasav Be'echad Benisin B'Shemitah, regarding a document that of the loan, that the date written is the first of Nisan in the Shemitah year, which the Gemara later on is going to explain why it is specifically mentioning a case of Shemitah. But either way, even though it says Shemitah, the creditor is going to be able to collect from the debtor either because he has a mashkin, or he has a prizbal, which either one, if you have a mashkin, collateral, or prizbal, then the Shemitah year does not cancel the debt, or actually, the case we'll be talking about where he's coming to collect before Rosh Hashanah of the 8th year, because Shemitah, when you're still in Nisan, is not Meshamedit. The Shemitah year only cancels a loan of having to be paid back at the end of the Shemitah year, like the Pasuk said in Devarim Tezvav, Miket Shevashon, at the end of the 7th year, at the end, and this guy's collecting beforehand. So there's no problem regarding collecting a loan when you're in the Shemitah year. So, but the date written on the loan was the first of Nisan in the Shemitah year. Now, Ubo, Eidim, Ba'amr, but then witnesses came along and said to the ones who were signed on the document, how are you witnesses on this document? But on that day that you signed the first of Nisan, you with us in a different place. And the document says you were in New Jersey on that date, but yet you were with us in Wisconsin, somewhere where it's impossible to be, and at the same time and the same day. So therefore, they basically were doing what's known as azama, which invalidated the document, actually requires the witnesses to get the same punishment or the same monetary payment they tried getting out from who they claimed was the borrower. In spite of that, says the Braisa, Shtar Kasher, the Eid of Ksher. No, the document is valid, it could still be collected with, and the witnesses are Kasher. Why is that? Says the Gemara, because Chayshin and Shema Ichruhu V'Kasvu. We suspect that maybe that this document was delayed in its writing. In other words, these witnesses actually saw the loan at a previous time, in the place where the document was written. Now, it was incumbent upon them, since they witnessed the loan, to write the document, but they were procrastinating, they delayed. They only ended up writing it a long time later in the first of Nisan. Now, they wrote it in the place where the Mezimin were talking about, but they didn't write the place where the document was written. Rather, they wrote the place where they saw the loan, not where they're writing. And now Rashi addressed the question, although the Gemara says in Gittin Daf Peyam at Aleph that the halacha is that when judges are, when they're writing in Hini, which is the name of a place, you should write in Hini, even though the thing that was given over to them, which they're documenting, was took place in Shili. However, says Rashi, but if they did write in Shili, where they wrote that place, even though they were in somewhere else, that doesn't invalidate it. It's just good advice that it shouldn't bring them to Azama, which is exactly the case that we're describing over here, so that you shouldn't say, wait a second, on that day you were with us, how are you going ahead and writing that it was at that time that you were in that place when you're really in a different place. And the truth is, yeah, they weren't there in that time. They were actually in that other place, which is where they were with those people. But they wrote the place, they wrote the date of a different date from when they were actually there. So since it's possible that really they were documenting a loan from a previous time and of that place, so though at that time they were not in that place, but it's only because they delayed it. And they were writing the date of when they wrote it, but the place of when they originally was. So it's not a contradiction that they really weren't there on that date. And that's why it's kosher and there's no hazama. That's what the Braisa says. So the question then is, but if you're going to say like the halacha of our Mishnah, that regarding monetary law, you need to do all the different interrogations of the witnesses, and the purpose of that is to find the discrepancies. And if it turns out that the day that they're saying is not the day that they were, that they weren't there, it turns out that there's a discrepancy, then they're going to be invalid. So then the question is, then how could you say in this brisa, we're saying that, look, there's a discrepancy. The document says that in the first of Nisan, they were there, but we have witnesses that say they weren't there. Oh, we say, oh, it's okay. Maybe they really delayed it. The question is, the whole purpose of Drisha V'Chakira is to contradict, to find the discrepancy in the witnesses. So how could you have a situation like over here where there's a clear-cut discrepancy, contradiction over here, where on the day which they're claiming they were in that place, they weren't, and then we go ahead and we rationalize and we justify and say, of course they weren't there in that day. They were there in the previous day. They're writing the place of where they were when they sold the loan. They're just writing the date of when they're actually writing it. How would we do that if the whole purpose of Drisha V'Chakira is to go ahead and disqualify them? And yet, here we have a clear-cut disqualification, and we're justifying, we're rationalizing. Seems to be a contradiction, the halacha of Mishnah and the Braisa. So the Gemara responds back and says, wait a second. Ulatamech, according to your reasoning that you're asking on our Mishnah from this Braisa, then you should have asked from a Mishnah, which is a stronger question, because a Mishnah on a Mishnah is stronger than from a Braisa. And also, everyone knows Mishnah is. Why asking from a Braisa? The Mishnah says in Sefer Shvi is, Shtari Chayv HaMogdamin, regarding documents of debt that were predated. In other words, they were written before the date of the loan. The loan only happened on Nisan. And however they wrote Adar, they wrote a month before, says the Mishnah, Psulim. So that document is void, is invalid, because essentially what they would be doing is they would be collecting from Lekuches, from those who had bought from this person's properties, the borrower, from the date that's written, which would be inappropriately, because he didn't borrow in Adar, he only borrowed a month later in Nisan. But anyone that bought from him in Adar, after the date that's written in the document, would be collected from. So the Rabbanan went ahead and they even penalized what's permitted because of what's forbidden. And therefore, it's even forbidden to go ahead and use that document, even from the second date, as the Gemara says in Ezu Neshach. That's if it's a predated document. V'amucharin, but if let's say it's a postdated document, which is the witnesses come along and say, wait a second, we know that this loan actually was before the date written in this document, then kasherin, then that document is valid, and it's actually even a good thing, because essentially what the lender here is doing is that he's forgiving for the lekuches that he could have collected, but he's forgiving. He wrote a later date that he could only collect from that later point and on. So therefore, it's kosher. Now we see from this Mishnah, not like our Mishnah, that we don't require drisha v'chakir regarding din mamnas. Why? Because if isa gadai tachbein drisha v'chakir, if you're entertained like the halacha of our Mishnah, that you require to interrogate and to check and to find discrepancies to disqualify the witnesses on din mamnas. So mocharin amai kasherin. So why is a post-dated document kasher? How could you go ahead and resolve the discrepancy of the date of the document? Why? Say it's a forgery. Say that actually the witnesses that are signed in it did not see this loan. Because witnesses come along and say, it didn't happen on that date. It happened earlier. Now Rashi just points out, so even if fine, but we have those other witnesses that say that they did see the loan. Says Rashi, yeah, but that would only be a milva peh. It would make it into an oral loan, which would not allow, let's say, collecting from lekuches, because a milva peh cannot collect from a shabadim, because there's no word that gets out. The word only gets out from a document. So how could we say a shtar mu'ucher is kasher? But what do you mean? If the whole point of finding discrepancies is to disqualify, why say that they only wrote it for a later date, and he was Michael? No, say that those who signed were liars, they were forgery, they didn't see it because it was actually at an earlier date. So why don't you ask from the Mishnah that we obviously don't need Drisha V'Chakiris, and no, we don't check. We actually try to resolve it. We try to rationalize it, as we find from this Mishnah Masechta Shviyas. Why ask from the Braisa when you can ask from the Mishnah? So that the Gemara answers, no, ha. This that you're asking, that why didn't I ask from a Mishnah, is like Kasha, that's not difficult. Because that Difam in the Kamina, I was saying even better, that the Braisa that I was asking from is better and a stronger question than asking from that Mishnah Masechta Shviyas. Because there's an added chiddush to the question. Because the case of the Braisa, as we alluded to earlier, says that fil echad benisin b'shmita, even though the date on it was the first of Nisan in the Shemitah year. Now, it's not so common for people to make a loan in the Shemitah year because they're afraid of the Shemitah year where it should not cancel their loans. Because a few months later, boom, the end of Shemitah, the whole thing is canceled. Where you would think to say that no one would come along and say that those who were writing the loan had delayed the writing and written it later. Because if you're not going to say that it was that the loan was on that day, delay moral ishtari. What do you mean? No one would go ahead and ruin the document to write a loan document, which was really months before that, to write it at this time in the Shemitah year? Because regarding the everybody would then start saying that this document must be forged because it's not normative to take a loan in the Shemitah year. So it doesn't make sense that there was a loan now. That's one flaw. And moreover, it wouldn't make sense that it was loaned before and that you're writing it later, which is totally limiting his time of collecting. And afilahachi, even so, you see from this braisa, kiven de shviyas, since ultimately the Shemitah year is not mishamet, it does not cancel, ela only seifa mishametis. It only cancels at the end of the Shemitah year, like we mentioned before, because like the pasuk says miketz. So even so, we go ahead and we are taila, we do rationalize, and we say that maybe it was delayed, and mechsharinon, and that still it's going to be kasher. So says the questioner, you see how far-fetched is the contradiction is from the Braisa to the Mishnah. That Mishnah Shviyas is not such a question. This is a really question. Because not only do we rationalize and we don't go with Drisha V'Chakiris, look how far we go. We're going and saying that the Shemitah year, where it's not even so common for someone, it makes sense that it was a forgery, still we're saying that could be it was written earlier and it was delayed. Which that doesn't make so much sense. Who would delay it into the Shemitah, which you're leaving barely any time to go ahead because it's going to be canceled at the end of the Shemitah year, and still we say it's kasher. So that's why we didn't ask from the Mishnah, rather ask from the Braisa. So the Gemara says, okay, but we come welcome kasher. So now we're back to the question that from our Mishnah that said that we're not toila, we don't rationalize, we do drishas v'chakiris, and we find contradiction. That's difficult from the Braisa, which says that, well, we rationalize, oh, maybe this, that, oh, no, it won't possible, it won't invalidate it. Maybe they delayed it, maybe they did that, maybe even in the Shemitah year. So how do we resolve that question? It says the Gemara, Simon Charpash. And the Malik, to recall the following four answers, are the names of the Amiram, which the Ches, the first one, is Omer B'Chanina. B'Chanina gives the following answer. He says, Dva Torah, according to biblical law, Echad din amamnes ve'echad din nefashes b'drisha v'chakira. Both monetary law and din nefashes require drisha v'chakira, shenem, like it says in the pasuk, is according in our Mishnah. Mishpat echad yilchem, that there's one judgment both for din nefashes and din amamnes, and our Mishnah was going with biblical law before the Takana Drabana. But then why did we say, as we see from the Braisa, that by monetary law we do not require Drisha V'Chakira? It's Kedeshle Tinel Delis B'Fnei Lavan, that we should not close the proverbial door in front of the borrower, and that is because if the lender is going to have to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt, because Drisha V'Chakira, they're going to start checking his witnesses, he's going to say, I'm not lending money. Well, I'm going to come to court and you're going to say, well, how about this and this, and you're going to start checking my witnesses, I'm not going to have to collect my money, and then I'm not going to lend anymore. So the Braisa was going after the Rabbanim made a takana to say, you know, for monetary law, we want people to be able to lend money, we don't require their witnesses to go through the whole Drisha V'Chakira process. Now, the Gemara asks, but if that's the case, Eliata, then as we continue to Amadbeis, then tohu, if the court makes an error regarding monetary law, then halacha should be lo yishlamu, that they should not have to pay up. because maybe if you had allowed the judges to do drush v'chakir on the witnesses, then they would have been had a more expansive understanding of what was going on, and they would not have made an error. So why is the halacha that by dinim amnis, if they make a mistake, they have to pay? If you just said that we don't allow them by dinim amnis to do drush v'chakir, which the Torah does allow them and actually requires it. Says the Gemara, no, because kol shekin shetinol delz b'vnei lovin. If we said that the court would not have to pay if they made a mistake regarding monetary law, for sure we would close the doors in front of lenders, because then they'd be afraid that I might have a court that's going to make a mistake and they're not going to pay for their mistake. And then it's not worth it. That's why we require the courts, even though we limit them, we don't even let them do drush v'chakiris, if they make a mistake, that they do have to compensate the wrong party to pay up to the lender. That's one answer. Rav Ami, he says that, no, actually both the Mishnah and the Braisa are both talking about post the rabbinic takana. But masnit in the hacha b'dinei knasis, our Mishnah that requires drish v'chakir is talking about regarding dinei knasis, laws of penalty, where that has nothing to do with nilas delas. Closing the door is only by a loan. Here it's talking about, let's say, somebody damaged somebody, or let's say, kefil, if someone stole and he gets caught. So that's nothing to do with a loan. Yeah, those types of witnesses require drish v'chakir. Whereas the Bryce was talking about regarding admissions or loans, where you could be concerned that it might close the door in front of the lender not wanting to lend, where this guy's coming to bring witnesses of admission that the borrower admitted in front of them, or that witnesses that sold the loan, where there we definitely have to be concerned for the ne'ilas delas if we sequester them and interrogate them. Therefore, the Bryce says that we don't require drush v'chakiris, and we actually rationalize and we try to resolve the inconsistencies. Third answer of Papa, he says, no, actually, both the Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about post takana, and they're both talking about admissions and loans. But Kan Bedin Meruma, our Mishnah is talking about that the court recognizes and realizes that the claimant, he looks like a crooked person. Or they understand from what the words are being said that it's crooked. That's where the Mishnah says, so you do drishas v'chakiris. But the case of the Bryce is that it doesn't seem to be anything wrong. Then we maintain, like the Takana Trabanan, which is not to do drishas v'chakiris. As the Gemara says, Kedrish Lakish, because Kedrish Lakish Rami, he had posed the following contradiction. See, the Pasuk says, Yikra, B'tzedik tishpat amesecha, with righteousness you should judge your friend. Now there it doesn't say B'tzedik tzedik. It doesn't say the word tzedik two times, which would tell us that the court has to be very careful to really check, show, and make sure that it's justified what they're judging to do drishas v'chakiris. But Iksiv, on the other hand, there's a passing in Devarim that does say tzedik tzedik tirdef. You pursue justice, you got to really make sure, which sounds like you should do drishas v'chakiris. So okay, so how we resolve that? Says Rish Lakish, Khan, the second pasuk is b'dim merubah, when it looks like that something's a little crafty over here. Then we do drishas v'chakiris. Khan, b'dim she'im merubah, but the first one was talking about when there doesn't seem to be anything out of place, then it's just b'tzadik tzadik tzadik, then we don't do drishas v'chakiris on the witnesses. Fourth approach of Ashiyama, he says, actually Rav Ashi is coming to talk about regarding what was just said from Rish Lakish. He says, masnitin, our Mishnah was very well resolved. Kedishin, like we answered, one of the answers that we said, whether like Rav Chanina said, or Rava says, or Rav Papa says. But Krai, he says, but the psukim that Rish Lakish had posed, which we brought in because of the last answer that Gemara had said, which is similar to Rav Papa's answer, he says that it's not difficult. You don't have to answer like Rish Lakish, like that one pasuk is talking about when it's b'dim merubah one not, because it's not a contradiction to psukim. The pasuk of tzedek tzedek is not coming to tell you that it requires, really making sure which is drish v'chakira. Rather, it's a totally different pshat. It's telling you echad ladin ve'echad lepshar. The two words tzedek tzedek, one is coming to tell you regarding the law, and one's coming to tell you regarding compromise, which is telling you tzadek your din or tzadek your compromise according to how you see fit. In other words, don't pursue one more than the other. Sometimes you have to do judgment, and sometimes you have to find the compromise. Ketan like Luna Braisa. Tzadik tzadik tirdev, when it says two types of justice, echel adin ve'echel abshar, because one is telling you regarding judgment and one's telling you regarding compromise. Ketzad, how so? As follows. Shtei svinis eves banar. If there's two ships going by in the river, and they encounter one the other, and they're coming one towards the other. If they both go by, they're both going to sink because they're both going to be pushing one the other. But if they go one after the other, meaning one goes in the meantime onto dry land until the other one goes by, and then it goes by, they'll both be able to pass by. So to bechein shnei gemalim, shoy oilim b'malas beis charein. Two camels that were going up this steep, narrow path by Beis Charon, which is going uphill, where there's nowhere to go right or to the left, and one has to be able to turn backwards until the other one has room to turn. You have to back down because there's no room to go. And then they encounter one the other. So and if they both go up, in other words, if, for example, one's coming up from one side of the mountain, the other one's coming from the other side, and they both reach each other at the top of the mountain, and the valley is very steep from the right and the left, there's nowhere to go, they're both going to fall down. If they do one after the other, they'll both be able to go up. So what do you do? Says the Braisa, if one is laden with packages and the other one's not, so then the judgment is, you push away the one that's not laden, and you let the one go that is packaged up. Or let's say one is close to its city, the other one's not close. So you reject the one that's close, it could go to its city, which is right there, from the one who's not close, who's very far. So you let the one who's very far go first. But let's say both of them were close, or they're both far. So what do you do then? Then you can't just do judgment. When one is late and one's not, when one is close to its city, one's not, then you go with judgment. But let's say there's no judgment, they both have the same rights, then hatel pshar b'nim. Then that's when you place a compromise between them, which is umal ischar zilizu. One pays the other one to go ahead and let it go first, and that compensates the other one. That is a compromise, because although based on judgment they both have the right, but that's not feasible. So then you compromise. That's what we learn now from tzedik tzedik tirdif, that sometimes tzedik din and sometimes tzedik pishara. Another interpretation from this pasuk, turn upon when the Braisa said tzedik tzedik tirdif, you should pursue justice. Halach achar bezn yafur. It's coming to tell you is you should really go after a very good court. Meaning, although you could find tzedek, but go for tzedek. Find a really good court to go to. Which tells us achar Rebbe Eliezer leLud, where you should go after Rebbe Eliezer, the great Rebbe Eliezer who was in Lud. Achar Rebbe Yochanan Mezakeh leBerachayil, which Tana parenthetically the Gemara brings a brisa regarding this place Berachayil, that kol richayim, when you hear the voice of the mill, beburni in this place called Burni. That means Shavua HaBen, Shavua HaBen. That's a sign that there's a bris milah circumcision over there. It's like as if they're announcing that there's a Shavua HaBen over here, because the mill is a sign for grinding herbs which are used to help the wound of the child by the bris milah. Now, the reason why they would do it that way is because it was a time by the foreign governments who decreed that they're not allowed to circumcise, so they were afraid to make an announcement that there's a bris milah. So they made that as a sign. When you hear the mill, that's telling you that there's a bris milah going on. And the reason why it's called a bris milah is called Shavua HaBen is because it's at the end of a week. In other words, you have to go through a week since on day 8. That's called Shavua HaBen. And Or HaNeir B'Berachayil, which is the place we just mentioned, if there's the light of the candles in Berachayil, meaning either that it's during the daytime or there's many, many candles at nighttime, that's a sign as if they're screaming, Mishtasham, there's a party there, there's a chasna, that if there's a lot of light, then you know that that's a sign that there's a chasna. So the Gemara continues what we were saying before. Turn upon the Braisa. Tzedek tzedek tirdef, you shall surely pursue righteousness. Halach achacham liyishiv, which tells us that you should go after the sages to their yeshivas, to the place of their assembly, where that's where the courts of law are established. For example, achar Reb Eliezer leLud, and all of them, each one in their place where they were. Achar Reb Yochanan ben Zakeh leBerachayil, it's telling the great tzaddik and his place. Achar Reb Shaul lePekiyin, Achar Reb Gamliel leYavna, Achar Reb Kiva leBnei Barak, Achar Reb Masi leRaimi, Achar Reb Chanan beDrat leSichni, which these are all the names of the places where they lived. Achar Reb Yisrael leTzipayi, Achar Reb Yudim Seir leNetzivin, Achar Reb Shaul leGoyel, after Reb Shaul in the diaspora, which actually refers to Pumbedisa, as the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah of Gimel Beis, that says you have to do this until you see all the diaspora is lit up like a big fiery flame, because they would show that they got the signal with the fires. So the Gemara there tells us that what does it mean until they see the entire diaspora lit up? Abaye says it refers to Pumbedisa, which the primary Shivan bubble was there in the diaspora, was in Pumbedisa. That's why it's called Goyla. Acher Rebbe LeBeisharim, you should go after Rebbe to his court in Beisharim. And Acher Chachamim, after the sages, meaning the Sanhedrin HaGadol, which was Lishkas HaGazas, they were in the chamber of hewn stone in the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Gemara continues the halacha of our Mishnah that said, the differences between Dinei Mamonos and Dinei Nefashos, so one of the more Dinei Mamonos Peischa Mechulu. Monetary law, you can open up whether to find favor for him or to find him guilty. However, regarding din nefashis, it's not like that. So that the Gemara asks, heich amrinan. So how do we say when we're opening up to find favor when we're receiving the witnesses regarding capital punishment, and we did drisha, the hakir, we checked out the witnesses, they're okay, and now we're coming to deliberate the court case. What do we tell the witnesses that we're required to, because we say we open up to find favor for the one that they want to execute? So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Hachir Amin Lahu, this is what we tell the witnesses. Miyemek Kedikamritsu, who said that it's like you're saying, maybe you guys are plotting against this person? And that's opening up as a way of saying that we're coming to protect and defend and find favor for this defendant. Now, on that, Omala Ula asked Rabbi Yehuda, but Vahachasmina Lahu. But like we're muzzling them. We're like closing the mouths of the witnesses because we're coming out, us the judges, and we're saying we're contradicting you. So they're going to back out right away, which you could do if it's Teich Kedibra. If they just finished saying and they started saying, they could still back out. Why would we say this if we're going to make the witnesses back off? So the Gemara asks on Ula, what's the problem? B'lachasmo. Yeah, let us muzzle them. Why is that a problem? Let them back out. Me, Tanya didn't learn the Braiser, B'shim Nelazayim, he says, Messian, the court would take and make wander, Esa'edim, the witnesses, before they would accept their testimony, Mimakam Lamakam. From one place to another place, from one room to another room, when they would come in to say testimony, they would say, no, we're not taking your testimony here, we're taking you to some other place. Why would they do that, make them go from one place to another place? That they should become perturbed. The Yachzim, they could start backing out, starting getting nervous, saying, what, they're taking me here, they're taking me here. You know what, forget it, I don't want to do this. So you see that we do try to intimidate them. We try to get them to not say their testimony because they're trying to incriminate someone. And we want to make sure they're 100% clear about that. So yeah, we would tell them to their face that, you know, who said, maybe you guys are plotting. Says the Gemara, no, me dummy? Is that comparable? Hasim emeilu kamitchu. When we take them from room to room, we're not doing anything directly, overtly intimidating. It's a default. The person feels intimidated. So, okay, that's a good tactic. But here we're directly pushing them away from being witnesses by saying, hey, who said you guys are not plotting? Now, that's problematic because the Torah tells in Devarim Yotzeh, Ubiyar Teharam Mikarmech, you have to, ultimately, if someone did do something that he has to be prosecuted for, we have to go ahead and allow that. So if it happens by itself, fine, but to clearly go ahead and reject witnesses by telling them that maybe they're lying and plotting, that's not appropriate. So Ella Amma Ula, rather Ula says, Hachi Aminan, this is what we say. We can't go ahead and tell them straight out like Rabbi Yehuda says that who said like what you're saying, because then we're going to muzzle them, and although we do muzzling, but we don't do direct muzzling. Rather, we say, how do we open up for a schus? We tell the defendant, Yesh locha edim lazimam, do you have witnesses that could do hazama on the witnesses that are incriminating you? And that will get them off the hook. Now that Amalei Rabba asked to Ula, wait a second. What, do we open up for to find the defendant not guilty, which would then find the witnesses guilty? If you're going to find Eide Hazama, that's going to then kill the first witnesses. So good, great, you're saving one guy, but then you're going to be killing two guys. So the Gemara says, wait a second, that's not a question. What, do you think that would be something negative if the witnesses would be huzim right now at this point in time before the Gemara Din, before the conclusion of the court case? Why? That's not a problem. But it's not, the Mishnah says in Masechtas Makis, Ein Edim Zeymin Aragin, the witnesses who were then huzim, they don't get killed, although they were falsely trying to execute someone else, actually Gemara HaDin, until it's the Gemara Din, and then they're huzim. But if during the deliberations, it just rejects what they said, but nothing bad would happen to them. So what's wrong with getting Edi Hazama right now in the beginning of the court case? That the Gemara says, no, Hachi Amina. This was my question. How could you go ahead and warn the defendant to try to find Edi Hazama, to find the witnesses who are trying to incriminate him, to find them huzam, but that would be something liable for the witnesses if Ilu Shosik Hai Ademigmar Dine, because this guy might be thinking, oh, wait a second, that's a great idea. You know what I can do? I'm going to get back at these witnesses. I'm not going to say anything the whole proceedings of the court case. Then when the conclusion of the verdict is handed down, then Umaisi Edim Amazonhu, then he's going to be witnesses, and then do Hazam on his witnesses. Then Havali Chavasit Shalzeh, that's most definitely somebody that's incriminating for the Edi Hazama, because then they're going to get killed. So although at this point, not, but if you're going to give him this idea, he might wait till later, so you're doing something schus for him, but which is Michevet for the two witnesses. Elam Rabba, rather Rabba says, the way we open up schus in the Din Nefashis case is, I mean, we tell the defendant, We don't tell them, do you have witnesses to do hazama to them, but rather, do you have witnesses to just contradict what they're saying? For example, the other witnesses that he would find would say, we saw the guy who you claim he murdered, we saw him alive, well, and kicking, which that would just nullify the witness's testimony, but everybody then would walk away exempt. Because the halacha of hazama, which is that the witnesses who lied, that they themselves get the death penalty that they tried doing to the defendants, only if the second pair of witnesses say, hey, you were with us in that place in that day, how can you say that? As the Gemara says in Masechtas Makos, Daf Hei Amud Aleph. So then we give them idea, just can you contradict, but not to do hazama. And then that would be a schus for everybody. Another interpretation of Kahana Amar, he says that the way we open up with the schus of the defendant, after we receive the testimony of the witnesses, is that we tell the witnesses, actually, it's interesting. From the words that you're saying, it actually comes out, it seems to us that from what you're saying, we're actually going to end up getting off the hook. He's actually not going to be guilty. And then they go ahead and they deliberate. But they're opening up and saying, although the witnesses are seemingly giving over evidence that this guy should be executed, they tell them and say, you know, it's actually interesting. Based on what you're saying, it seems like he's not really guilty. But then they go and they deliberate. But again, they're going to be honest, but that's how they open up for schus. They tell the witnesses that, you know, actually doesn't seem so incriminating. Or another interpretation, they both say that it's actually not, they don't say anything to the witnesses. When they say they open up for schus, zamrin and lay, they tell the defendant, if you didn't kill, if you didn't murder, don't be afraid. Because they want to put him at ease so that he could properly defend himself. That's what it means, open up for schus. They tell him not to worry if he didn't do the crime. A different interpretation of Hashem, he says, what they say is, kol mishi yedei lo yischus, whoever knows something to exonerate this person, yav avil amar lav, should come and teach it regarding him. And that's a way of opening up schus for him. Says the Gemara, Tanikav Asay Dabai Rav, we have a Brisa that supports an Abaya and Rav's interpretation, who they said that they tell the guy, don't worry, if you didn't do anything wrong, you shouldn't be afraid. Because Rabbi Ayman, the Brisa teaches, the Rabbi says, quoting a pasuk in Bamidbar, Im loy shachav ish eisach, this is regarding the suspected adulterous woman, the Saita, if a man did not lay with you, Vim loy satis begayim, etc., and if you did not stray, that this is opening up with a condition of merit. And specifically, it's talking to the woman, to the defendant, saying, don't worry, if you didn't do anything, you'll be okay. So continues the Gemara on the top of Lamed Gimel Ma'al from the Brisa from Rebbe, says, Rebbe, Mikan, Shepeischem, B'din Nefasha, Tchil L'schus, from here is where we learn the halacha, that regarding capital punishment, which the Saita would get killed, we open up for her merit that she should not be guilty. In other words, from the fact that we learn from here, which is the same idea that Abaye and Rava were saying, was, don't worry, if you did not kill, don't worry. That's the same type of limud schus that the Kahanim are telling the suspected adulterous woman. Don't worry, if he did not lay with you, if he did not stray, nothing's going to happen. You're going to have blessings and so on. That's the opening of the limud schus that we tell him, if you didn't do anything wrong, don't worry, nothing bad is going to happen to you.